Welcome to another dual review on a Friday night for WWE SmackDown, AEW Rampage. I am the Sala Monster. This is the Sala Monster Sounds Off YouTube channel, and it is Friday, December 17th, 2021. I hope everybody is having a good Friday night. On this, the three-year anniversary, as you saw there, of the night that the McMahons took back control of Monday Night Raw, and they told us all, they promised us, that they were going to give us what we wanted. They were going to put the power back in our hands. We are the authority. You are the authority. I am the authority. And as I look back now on the last 3 years, all I can say is, I'm sorry. I apologize. I did not use my power to its full ability. I feel like I have failed you over these last 3 years. And if I am a little too loud, let me lower this here. It might be a little too loud. There we go. That's a little bit better. But anyway, it is a three-year anniversary of that. Tonight, though, on SmackDown, WWE taped not only one SmackDown, but two, because they are not doing a live show next week on Christmas Eve. So next week, SmackDown, just be aware, especially those of you who like to avoid spoilers. They were taping two shows tonight. That second show will air next Friday night. I don't remember offhand. I believe it'll be on Fox. I want to say that the following week, which I think is New Year's Eve, that might be an FS1 clip show. I think they're doing a highlight show. But, you know, I got to say, I put that picture that you saw there at the beginning. I put that on Twitter earlier today, or a similar photo. For those of you who are listening to this on the download and have no idea what I'm talking about, it's that photo, that screenshot from Raw 3 years ago. Vince, Stephanie, Shane, Paul McMahon, Triple H, all standing in the ring together. And I reminded people of this being the anniversary. And I got a lot of feedback to that tweet. And I got a lot of people who defended WWE and blamed the fans and say WWE gave the fans exactly what they wanted and they didn't know what they wanted and it's all the fans' fault and WWE has given us a lot of great stuff and blah, 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 blah. And there, it's not as if it's been 3 years of all bad stuff. I'm not saying there hasn't been any good stuff, but you get your usual WWE defenders. And there was one person who used the words must see when it came to SmackDown. And there was a period of time where I would have said that SmackDown was, you know, easily the best of all the WWE shows, and it was the show to watch. If you were going to pick a WWE show, just one, to watch each week, it should be SmackDown. And some people might still think, of all the choices you have, SmackDown would be the choice to go with. But he used those words, must see. And as I watched SmackDown tonight, I was trying to pay attention for what exactly makes SmackDown must see. We know that SmackDown has the biggest star in the entire company. We know SmackDown is the Roman Reigns show, right? We know that. And without Roman Reigns, this company would be in a real bad spot. I mean, they would be in a real pickle if Roman Reigns suddenly went down to injury, if Roman Reigns took himself out of the game. Roman Reigns missed 1 week of television. Now, imagine if he had to miss a month. Or if he had to miss 6 months of TV, how fucked these people would be. But I watched this show and I thought to myself, you know, outside of that main event segment, SmackDown was a lousy show. SmackDown was not a good show. What made SmackDown must see is the Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar segment that came at the end of the night. Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, and Paul Heyman. All the work that those three have done in this storyline and the build-up to their match at Day One, and even going back a few months when Brock came back at SummerSlam, I've largely enjoyed everything that they have done. And we've seen more of Brock Lesnar on television recently than we have, I feel like, his entire run since he came back in 2012. He's been on television now quite a few times. And everything that they have done has been great, including that main event segment tonight, which really has me very interested in their match at Day One, especially in light of what happened at the end of the show, which we're going to get into here in a little bit. But to say that SmackDown is must-see, there is no such thing anymore as must-see programming. There is no such thing anymore as a must-see weekly WWE show. It does not exist. And people give SmackDown, I think, they grade it on a curve because of how horrible Raw has been. That does not make SmackDown must-see. There is nothing must-see outside of Roman Reigns, nothing must-see lately about SmackDown. And tonight was a perfect example of that. That show was a complete pile of garbage outside of the main angle. You remove the main angle, you don't have much of a show. As far as Rampage tonight, Rampage was fine. I can't say that Rampage was really an overly exciting show tonight. It kind of felt, I don't know, it felt almost like they were rushing through a lot of stuff, especially in that main event. You know, we had two multi-man matches on the show tonight. They opened the show with an 8-man tag, and they closed the show with a 10-man tag on a 1-hour show. Now, we had one singles match in the middle with the women, submission match, to kind of break things up a little bit. I don't know, an 8-man tag and a 10-man tag on a 1-hour show seems like overkill to me. We're going to get into all that. We're going to talk about both shows here. Super chats are open. So if you agree or disagree, feel free to chime in. And thank you all for the super chats that have already come in. I appreciate the support. But you will see them popping up on your screen. By the way, we also have some details, and you'll see some of them flashing on the bottom of your screen there. But we do have more information on the Owen Hart tournament, or I should say tournaments, coming up next year that AEW is going to be doing. And a preview for Dynamite and Rampage next week. So we'll get into all that. Let's start with the blue brand. Let's start with SmackDown. And let me know in the chat, let's show I know the audio is good. I'm not too loud, I'm not too low. I want to make sure I'm just right for everybody tonight. SmackDown opened with a recap of last week's segments with Brock Lesnar, Sami Zayn, and Paul Heyman. And that's another thing I've enjoyed. The banter with Brock Lesnar and Sami Zayn has also been very enjoyable. So pretty much anything Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns have been involved in the last few weeks is the only thing I would look at and go, hey, that was great. I really enjoyed that. I know it's hard to believe, you know, all the pies back and forth with Charlotte and Tony Storm and, you know, the whatever stuff they're doing with Shinsuke and Rick Boogs dancing around like they're some traveling band. I mean, I can't imagine. Happy talk with Madcap Moss. I know it's hard to believe that there's nothing else on this show that has really knocked my socks off. So Paul Heyman was shown backstage by himself. He was holding the Universal Championship, and he was waiting very patiently, Michael Cole told us, for the arrival of Roman Reigns. In fact, he had been there all day long. He was standing there waiting for Roman Reigns all day long. Roman Reigns was on sabbatical last week, right? He was in Samoa. He was training for his match. At day one, he was not on the show. Pat McAfee said that he was told that Roman and Paul Heyman had not spoken all week, which is interesting because last week on the show, if you remember, it was Paul Heyman who really kind of snapped Brock out of this whole friendly relationship, this budding friendship with him and Sami Zayn. He wanted the killer. He wanted the conqueror back, which was a little suspect given that Roman Reigns is his guy. Why would he want to rile up Brock Lesnar like that? So the two had not spoken all week. But the show opened in the ring with Sasha Banks and Toni Storm teaming up against Charlotte Flair and Shotzi Blackheart. An actual match instead of a long promo segment. And they gave them a lot of time, too. They gave these women almost 20 minutes. I'll say this, when Sasha and Charlotte were in the ring together, this was really good. It's almost as if these two have worked together before. You would watch these two in the ring and almost believe that they've had a few matches together in their day. But I thought Sasha Banks was great throughout the match. I cannot say the same for Shotzi Blackheart. She looked really rough in there. And I also don't think that there's, I'm watching Toni Storm in there with Charlotte Flair and, you know, I don't think that they're really in sync either. I mean, the few times we've seen them in the ring, they really don't seem to be on the same page. They're going to have a match, which is being taped tonight, but they're going to have a match that'll air next week. Maybe another one at the pay-per-view. We'll see if they can, work that out. But to go back to Shotzi for a second, she looked rough tonight, but also, this heel thing is not working. Heel Shotzi Blackheart is not working. Because this woman, I don't think, was meant to be a heel. I think they need to call an audible and come up with some reason to get her back to being a babyface. I think that's the role that she would do better in. I don't know if that would change how she works in the ring and if it would improve anything, because she's looked a little rough in some of her matches. But on a separate note, I just think that this heel thing with her is not working. But there were a few tentative moments in there with Toni Storm and Charlotte Flair when they first got in the ring together. Shotzi missed a splash in the corner. Toni got the hot tag, and she backed Shotzi into the corner. Heels quickly regained control. Sasha eventually tagged back into the match. Charlotte went for a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker. That was the second time in this match she attempted to go for a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker. She did hit it the first time. Second time, though, she didn't hit it. Sasha shouted, "Crossbody!" And then wouldn't you know, as she went into the tilt-a-whirl, Sasha landed on top of Charlotte with a crossbody. I mean, she did call that one. John Cena would be proud of that spot calling. Sasha followed that up with a bulldog. She climbed up to the top rope. Toni Storm made the blind tag. Charlotte avoided a flying Sasha Banks, who was then thrown out to the floor. But Charlotte turned around, and Toni Storm came off the top rope with a crossbody for a great near fall. That was a great near fall, got a big reaction. Everybody thought she had the match won. Flair went for her moonsault, and we all know what happened next. Toni rolled out of the way. Charlotte lands on her feet. She goes for the second moonsault, the standing one, and Toni got her knees up, caught Charlotte right in the mouth, and she rolled up. Charlotte bridged over for the shock pin. She pinned the SmackDown Women's Champion. She looked absolutely gobsmacked that she won the match. She couldn't believe it, but the people seemed happy to see her win, which I guess is a good sign. Now, next week, we now know, Toni Storm is going to challenge Charlotte Flair for the SmackDown Women's Championship. I'm not sure why they're not waiting for day one. I have to assume they're going to shoot some kind of an angle here with this finish, and it will lead to another match at the pay-per-view. Has to lead to another match at the pay-per-view. I'd be stunned if they didn't do a match at day one. Toni winning, though, tonight does not bode well, I don't think, for her chances next week. I don't think that bodes well. Although on the Christmas show last year, we did get a title change on that show. We got a new Intercontinental Champion. That was when Big E beat Sami Zayn. So it's not as if they haven't done title changes on the holiday shows before. And I suspect that if there was going to be a title change on the show tonight, it'll leak very quickly because it is being taped. In fact, it's already been taped. But I don't think it bodes very well for Toni Storm's chances next week, her winning tonight. I didn't think this was a very good match. That one great near fall with Toni almost pinning Charlotte before she did pin Charlotte. But the match itself, I didn't think it was very good. I mean, they gave it plenty of time, which is nice to see. And it's something I'd like to see them do more of. But I didn't think this match was really all that great. When Sasha was in there, though, whatever Sasha was doing, I thought she looked smooth. She looked good. Her stuff looked good. Even Charlotte. You know, outside of the moonsault stuff, which is, you know, to do it in every single match, you know, I don't know that that needs to be a move that she busts out in every single match that she does. When they were in the ring together, those two, that was when the match was at its peak. Xavier Woods was in the back. He was sitting upon his throne as Sir Kofi Kingston was there. Some members of the roster, they were fawning over the king, surrounding him, surrounding his throne. Nakamura was there, Rick Boogs, Ricochet. Boogs kissed the hand. He kissed the I don't know if it was the ring finger or what it was. He kissed Woods' hand. Uso showed up, made fun of Woods as being this cosplaying geek, which he basically is. Although he embraces it. You know, we know he's a big gamer. He's got the gig on G4. I mean, Xavier's not shy about it. He's a gaming geek. Nothing wrong with that. But the Usos were not wrong. He looks like a fool sitting there with this giant oversized crown on his head. So the New Day challenged the Usos to a match later tonight. Usos agreed. They promised to also beat the New Day at day one. I mean, this is ridiculous. As I'm watching this, And I already knew the match was happening at the pay-per-view. We already knew that. We just saw them in a match last week. They did that match. Who's the greatest tag team at the moment in WWE? They brought the Raw Tag Team Champions over to SmackDown. So we had Randy Orton and Matt Riddle against The New Day, against the Usos last week in the main event. And now we get the match again. Tonight, when we already know we're getting the match again at Day One. This match did not need to happen tonight. Over and over and over and over again. Tonight, of course, was non-title. At the pay-per-view, it'll be for the titles. But I just, you know, I saw that and I said, why are we getting this match tonight? But this is what WWE does. You know, AEW barely gives any rematches. It's like Tony Khan is allergic to rematches. He generally does not like doing them. WWE does them all the fucking time. There has to be a happy medium. Some rematches are okay. There has to be a happy medium of not too many, but not too few. Can we meet in the middle somewhere, please? We had the Viking Raiders. They made their entrance for a match against Jinder Mahal and Shanky. And what followed, as they were making their entrance, we got the Raiders coming out to go ahead and raid and whatever the hell it is that they do. What followed was a commercial break, a backstage interview with Natalya, who made a threat to Xia Li after what happened last week when Xia Li came out to save Naomi. So she threatened her. Then we got a Raw Rebound video recapping all the chaos that Bobby Lashley left in his wake on Monday night. Then we got another entrance for Jinder and Shanky before finally pitching it to another commercial break. I guess that's our punishment for getting a 20-minute long match to open the show. So we had the Raiders against Jinder and Shanky. Michael Cole talked about what an important match this was. This is a very important match. It was so important, in fact, that it was joined in progress because it started during the commercial break. That's how important this match was. Heels isolated Eric on their side of the ring, away from Ivar. Jinder applied a very exciting chin lock. Eric broke free, tagged in Ivar, who attacked Shanky, but he no-sold it. And for the finish, Eric slammed Ivar into Shanky in the corner. Eric took out Jinder with a suplex, and Ivar hit a big splash off the top on Shanky for the win. Not much to it, but the right team won. It's going to take some time, because the Viking Raiders have not been put in a position to feel special at all. And the only way to kind of get some of that back is for them to start winning matches consistently and then eventually challenge for the tag team titles. So, right team went over here in this match. Paul Heyman was still waiting outside for Roman Reigns. They cut back to Paul Heyman when this was over. He was still in the back. And Heyman got all excited because there was a car that pulled up. And he, of course, thought that it was Roman Reigns. He thought that his tribal chief was about to greet him. Instead, he was greeted by Brock Lesnar, who asked Heyman if he was expecting Reigns. And he told him, good luck with that. And he patted Heyman on the chest, and Paul nervously thanked him, and Lesnar headed into the building. I was surprised to see Brock Lesnar here. I thought he would take the week off. You know, we saw him last week. I feel like we've seen him a lot lately. I'm not used to seeing him this much. So I was actually kind of surprised. I knew Roman was coming back tonight, and I figured the whole show would be built around him confronting Paul Heyman about what happened last week. But I was not sure if Brock would be there, so it was nice to see Farmer Brock joining us tonight. We had a Happy Talk segment. Not a lot of happy stuff on the show. But we got a Happy Talk segment in the ring with Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss. They had Adam Pearce's desk in the ring that they stole last week, which still had Drew McIntyre's sword jammed right into the middle of it, where he left it last week. That was when Adam Pearce told him, you can't go out to the ring with your sword. You got to leave it backstage, before he went out there for his match. So Drew jammed the sword right in the middle of the desk and left it there. And then there was a very, very brief backstage segment last week where they showed Corbin and Moss you know, secretly stealing the desk. Okay. So there it was in the ring with them. Nice to see, by the way, they transported the desk from Los Angeles to Chicago. So they used the sword as a hat rack. Corbin said, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. I feel like we're 5 years old again. And the audience clapped. Don't encourage him. Soon he'll be singing, the wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round, round and round. The wheels on the bus go round and round all day long. I mean, we could sing all day long. I mean, you're taking me back to my childhood here. The wipers on the bus go swish, swish, swish. You know, I could do this all day. So while Madcap spoke, the fans in Chicago were so enamored with what this man had to say that they began chanting CM Punk. I forgot they were in Chicago tonight. Once I started hearing the CM Punk chants, I realized, they're at the Allstate Arena. So Corbin was praising Moss, and he gave him the sword as a gift. That is, of course, if he can remove it from the desk. And he tried to remove the sword from the desk, couldn't do it, couldn't pull it out. Hate it when you can't pull out. It's tough. He tried, though. Wasn't having a lot of luck. All of a sudden, Drew McIntyre's music hit, and he walked to the ring, and he said, "What happened, lads? Are we having some performance issues?" And they tried to attack him. He fought them off all by himself. And of course, when Drew went to pull the sword out of the desk, he pulled it right out. Like Thor's hammer. And the people cheered, and he tried to cut Corbin in half, but Moss pulled him out of the ring and saved his life. Moss said he loosened the sword for him, which is why he was able to pull the sword out. You know, this happy Corbin stuff is just... It is so bad. Now I get, you know, he's the heel and people are supposed to roll their eyes and they're supposed to boo him, but I also want to be entertained. The Happy Corbin stuff is so, so less entertaining than broke-ass bitch Baron Corbin. I miss broke-ass bitch Corbin. You know, he was still a heel. And we can point and we can laugh and we can mock. So I'm holding out hope that at some point his luck will change and he'll gamble all of his money away, something will happen, and he'll be broke all over again. Because I was starting to like Baron Corbin. I guess, you know, he's a heel. We can't have that. We can't have people starting to like Baron Corbin. They were feeling sorry for Baron Corbin. They didn't want to turn him babyface because that would be a terrible idea. So they decided, how can we make people so sick of seeing this man? We'll just make him Happy Corbin and we'll put Riddick Moss as his sidekick, telling horrible lame dad jokes on TV every week. I guess it must be working, because every time they come on TV, I try to make myself scarce and go do something else, except tonight, because I have to take notes and pay attention to what's going on. Sami Zayn was backstage with Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville, and he says, you know, I'm here to wish you guys happy holidays. It is, after all, the season of giving. And that was kind of his way of pointing out that he was screwed out of his Universal Championship match with Roman Reigns. He wasn't very happy about that. He also pointed out how he was cheated out of the Intercontinental title on SmackDown 1 year ago. As I mentioned before, there was a lumberjack match, if you remember, a year ago on TV, and Sammy lost his Intercontinental title to Big E. And so Adam Pearce proposed that Sammy take part in what he called a 12 Days of Christmas 12-man gauntlet next week on the Christmas Eve edition of SmackDown, with the winner challenging for the Intercontinental title. Who is the Intercontinental? Is it still Shinsuke? I don't even remember anymore. I think it's not. Is Nakamura still the champion? He didn't lose it, right? He didn't lose it. No, he lost a bunch of tag team matches as the Intercontinental champion. So excuse me, it's hard to remember sometimes who exactly has the championship because it's been treated like such dog shit now for the past few months. So I guess the winner will challenge Nakamura for the title. But in the gauntlet next week, it's going to be Sami Zayn. We've got Sheamus. We've got Eric Ivar, Angel Garza, Humberto Carrillo, Drew Gulak, Mansoor, Cesaro, Ricochet, Jinder Mahal, and Shanky. And my hope is that we have a Sheamus win in the gauntlet next week. And we get Sheamus one-on-one with Shinsuke Nakamura. And Sheamus can finally claim his very first Intercontinental title. I actually want the guy to win the title. Because I know in real life it would mean a lot to him to win the championship. And frankly, I've given a lot of praise to Sheamus and his work in the ring over the last several months. I think he goes out there and he has great matches. So Sheamus against Nakamura works for me. And God knows you got to get that belt off Nakamura, because every day it spends around his waist, given what they're doing with him, the championship means less and less and less and less and less. You're better off putting it on someone like Sheamus. So even though I was there live in Dallas on that NXT show where Nakamura debuted, and what a night that was. The old NXT. Glory days gone by. And they had a great match that night. It was Nakamura against Sami Zayn, right? That was then, this is now. As much as it would be nice to see Zayn back in the ring with Nakamura, in this case, I'm hoping for a Sheamus win next week. And by the way, I talked about Kevin Owens the other night, and I'm going to talk more about him re-signing with WWE on the podcast this weekend, because we have more details now on how much he signed for and how long he signed for. And from himself, on a podcast he was on, why he re-signed with WWE. But the belief is that Sami Zayn may have already re-signed with WWE as well, because his deal was said to be coming up also early in 2022, although I don't know that we had an exact date on that. But there was a note in the Observer earlier today that, not a confirmation, but the belief is that Zayn may have also re-signed. So it looks like Sami will not be going anywhere, just like Kevin Owens, for at least the next 3 years, will not be, or until they cut him, will not be going anywhere. So maybe one of these days we'll get to see a final cut of that conspiracy documentary that Sammy's been filming for a while. I'm hoping it's a real, I mean, I think they've said that it's a real, or Sammy has said that it's a real documentary. They've been doing legitimate filming. I'm hoping there is some kind of finished product that we can actually, you know, we can actually watch. Speaking of Sheamus, he was out next against, well, not against, but he was out to introduce his boy, Ridge Holland. He was coming out for a match one-on-one against Cesaro. See, the program is with Sheamus and Cesaro, but this week it was Ridge Holland doing the dirty work for Sheamus. Sheamus distracted Cesaro before the bell, which allowed Holland to hit Cesaro in the ribs with the billy club that he carries around to the ring with him. And the announcers wondered, is Cesaro going to be able to continue? Is he going to be able to start the match? As they went into the commercial break, it was this question that just haunted all of us going into the commercial. What is the condition of Cesaro? Is he going to be able to wrestle in this match? And sure enough, they came back from commercial, and Cesaro said that he was too injured to compete, and he forfeited the match. Of course, he wrestled the fucking match. How is that even a question? Of course he wrestled the match. You know better than that. Pat McAfee dropped a Shad Khan reference, talked about him firing Urban Meyer as the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. A real winner, Urban Meyer. Holland jumped Cesaro with the bell, hit a backbreaker, put him in an abdominal stretch. Cesaro fought back with a back suplex. He knocked Holland to the floor. Sheamus then caused a distraction. A lot of distracting going on of late in WWE and AEW. A lot of distractions going on. People are so easily distracted. It's pretty scary when you consider that these people are driving from city to city, town to town every single week. I hope they're not distracted drivers on the road the way they're distracted here on TV. So Holland took advantage of the distraction, hit a power slam, and picked up the win. Look, a win is a win. I don't know that this really did anything for Holland. I mean, what did it really do for Ridge Holland? Not much. You know, he hit Cesaro with a foreign object. He hit him with a weapon at the beginning of this thing. He had Sheamus. He was coming out to Sheamus's music. Sheamus came out to his own music, introduced this guy. He hit him with a weapon. 3 minutes later, off a distraction by Sheamus, he pinned him. It's about Sheamus and Cesaro. It's not really about Ridge Holland. So you know, when I saw Ridge Holland in NXT for the first time, the way he was moving around and throwing his opponent around, I don't remember who it was that he was in the ring with. But Tuxedo says, talking about distractions, as the Asuka thumbs up pops up. She did distract me, actually. See, I was just distracted by that Asuka gif on the screen, because we had a new subscriber, JD35, whatever the number was. Welcome, JD. See, even I'm getting distracted now. Look at this. It's rubbing off on me. At least I'm not distracted by entrance music. That's the big difference. So anyway, I don't think this did Ridge Holland any real favors. When I first saw him in NXT, though, he was impressive. You know, he didn't do much. He wasn't having long matches, but there were certain things about him, the way he would move around in the ring. It kind of reminded me of Brock Lesnar a little bit. This is before he got hurt. Then he was gone for a very long time. I see him here on this show, and so far, he's just another guy. You know, it's another guy with a funny hat coming out and winning in 2 minutes off a distraction. I don't know how people get over when you do that, but a win is a win. In the back, Drew McIntyre was walking around with his sword looking for Corbin and Moss. Nobody seemed overly concerned about the fact that this guy was walking around looking for people, carrying a deadly weapon around. Naomi was out next to talk about the only thing on her Christmas wish list, which is a match against Sonya Deville. It's all she wants for Christmas. She called out Cruella Deville so they could have that match tonight. And I know you're going to be very surprised when I tell you this. We didn't get the match. Very, very surprising, I know. Sonya came out, reminded her that when she's got her suit on, I don't wrestle. But she had another opponent in mind for her, Shayna Baszler. And Naomi said, I got no problem facing Shayna, but I want you. And Sonya got into the ring, and she looked like she was considering her offer, and she started taking her suit jacket off. Baszler snuck up from behind Naomi and hit her in the knee. And Sonya then said the referee could go ahead now and start the match. Baszler continued to attack the leg, and she applied some sort of leg lock. Naomi, in trying to maneuver her way out of it, kind of, she's still in the leg lock, but she kind of gets up and then falls forward with all of her weight on Shayna Baszler and pins her shoulders down to the mat for a count of three. This went 30 seconds. This wasn't a match. It was an angle. And this is what we've been getting with them. We're not really getting matches. We're getting angles. Week after week after week, building to the eventual singles match between two women who we still, by the way, do not know why they are feuding. We do not know why Sonya Deville has had beef with Naomi. Because I remember the first time Naomi showed up on TV, she was gone for a very long time, and she showed up on TV backstage to confront Sonya about wanting to wrestle and she wants to get back in the game, and she wasn't being disrespectful. It's not like, oh, I remember that segment where she kind of mouthed off to Sonya. She said something to embarrass Sonya. No. Sonya has been a bitch to her since day one, and we still, after all these months, have not even gotten an explanation on TV of why. It just is. So Naomi foiled Sonya's plan. Deville couldn't believe it. And I guess we'll have to wait for the angle next week. When Sonya Deville leaves Cole in her stocking, I guess. In the back, Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss were hiding from Drew McIntyre and his sword in a closet. And all of a sudden, Megan Morant, who is the one of the newer backstage interview ladies, she found them, as did the cameraman who was filming them in this closet, and they put the light on. And Corbin said Moss would wrestle Drew McIntyre at day one, which looked like a bit of unwelcome news to old Madcap, but then he thought about it and said, okay, yeah, sure, no problem. So we're getting Drew McIntyre at the pay-per-view, one-on-one, against Madcap Moss. And I know that you guys are very excited. I'm sure you're just beyond excited to see that match. But what makes it even worse is that what it likely means is that after Drew beats Moss, this is all just building to a match at the Royal Rumble between Drew McIntyre and Baron Corbin. That is what this is likely building to. So if you're already bored of this shit with these three, get ready, because it's only just beginning. The match with Moss on January 1st is only the first step in what will eventually be a single. Who knows, they may do a triple threat. It may all go all the way to the Royal Rumble and beyond to build to a three-way, or a handicap match, whatever you want to call it. But this is the feud that we have now. This is the card that we have been dealt with these three on SmackDown. All built around a sword. And bad jokes. I'm sure that was on your wish list of matches that you guys wanted to see in 2022. Was Drew McIntyre against Baron Corbin. We had the New Day against the Usos, non-title. Stop me if you've heard that one before. Usos had the advantage heading into the break. Late in the match, the Usos made a tag, referee missed it. And while Jimmy was bickering back and forth with the referee, Kofi Kingston caught him with the Trouble in Paradise and pinned him. So let's pause here for a moment. And Tuxedo T. Servo, thank you, brother, for the $5 super chat. Disappointed Solomon. So that $5 super chat is actually the perfect super chat for tonight. But let's pause for a moment here to evaluate what a week this has been for champions in WWE. So let's see. On Raw Monday night, Matt Riddle, who is one half of the Raw Tag Team Champions, got pinned by Otis. So one half of the Raw Tag Team Champions got pinned. The WWE Champion, the top champion on SmackDown, Big E, also got pinned. Tonight, the SmackDown Women's Champion, Charlotte Flair, got pinned. And the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos, also got pinned. For the second straight week. I believe it was Jey Uso last week in the three-way who took the losing fall. So that's 2 weeks in a row that the SmackDown Tag Team Champions have taken the loss. You people hear me say it all the time. I've been saying it for years. I have a t-shirt up in our store right now on Pro Wrestling Tees. That's been up for like 5 years now that has the logo on it. Champs are chumps. I've been saying it for years. And it was never more apparent than this week in WWE. Champs are chumps. Unbelievable. Backstage, Roman Reigns finally arrived. We had about 15 minutes left in the show. Roman Reigns arrived. Paul Heyman was just beaming with pride. So nice of the champion to show up in time for the end of the show. He was wearing his new Needle Mover t-shirt. He's got a new t-shirt out. This, of course, goes back to the whole thing from many, many weeks ago with CM Punk and Roman. Roman saying that they don't have any needle movers. I move the needle. I mean, by default of everybody in WWE, he would be the one that you could say moves the needle. But if we're being perfectly honest, there's not a fucking person in WWE these days moving anything. I mean, that's just a fact. They don't have anybody who's really moving any needle. When they were running into the issue of we can't sell tickets to the UBS Arena Long Island show a few weeks ago, there was a whole bunch of things that they did. They discounted tickets. They were doing, here in the local market here, they were doing 2-for-1 deals on tickets. But then they added Roman Reigns, who's a SmackDown star, SmackDown champion. They added him to the Raw show, the advertising locally for Raw. What'd they move? I think they moved 200, 300 tickets. Doesn't seem like a needle mover to me. But that's his new t-shirt. And it's not a bad-looking t-shirt either. And it's got like this gauge, with a needle on it. And the gauge runs from jobber to mid-carder to main eventer. And then at the end it says Tribal Chief. There's Asuka again. Hey, Dinesh. Welcome, brother. Dinesh is the latest subscriber to the channel. See, she distracted me again. But it was interesting seeing that t-shirt and the word jobber on there because, you know, a lot of these wrestlers are very sensitive when, you know, you use the word jobber. It's like they take great offense to it. And so now WWE is producing a t-shirt for the biggest star in the entire company that has the word jobber on it. So when I see stuff like that, it's like you can't get upset about it anymore. Once you mainstream it and you start putting it on merch, you can't get upset at people. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Oh, you fans, talent, doesn't matter. You can't get upset anymore when people use the word jobber. You just can't. It's like these wrestlers who would get upset when they would get messages on social media from fans who use wrestling lingo and wrestling terminology, heels and faces and heat and stuff like that. And they would say, well, you're not in the business. You shouldn't be using terms like that. Meanwhile, WWE years ago started producing these DVD documentaries where every fucking documentary, every wrestler was using insider lingo and terminology. And they were saying words like marks and heels and faces. And then they get upset at the fans when they regurgitate that same language back at them on social media. Don't blame the fans. Blame the fucking company for mainstreaming that type of shit. It's just funny to me. Anyway. Reigns told Paul when he got out of the car, he goes, we're going to go to the ring. And they started walking into the building. You could not wipe the smile off of Paul Heyman's face. He was so happy as he walked in lockstep into the building with Roman Reigns. So Reigns and Heyman and the Usos, they hit the ring. And Reigns was not happy about the fact that the Usos lost. They lost last week. They lost tonight. So he pointed that out. He goes, you know, you guys know that I don't like it when you lose. But your family, your blood. Then he looked over at Paul Heyman and he said, but you're not. You're not blood. And he asked him a series of questions. He goes, can I trust you, wise man? He said, last week you seemed a little shady to me. Did you know that Brock Lesnar was going to return at SummerSlam? Did you know that Brock Lesnar was going to be at Madison Square Garden on that SmackDown show back in September? Did you know that Brock Lesnar's suspension was going to be lifted? Heyman said nothing as he asked these questions. Heyman looked like he was about to shit himself. And then he goes, here's the most important question. Are you a special counsel or are you an advocate? And Heyman went to grab the microphone out of Roman's hand, but then he realized you don't do that, so he went and got his own microphone. And Heyman, as he has been throughout this entire storyline, Paul Heyman was great. His eyes were all red, like he was about to cry, like he was about to make himself cry. He looked like he was just walking on eggshells. He could just sell the story without saying a single word just by the expression on his face. You know, his lip will quiver. His eyes will get all big and bulgy. Or he'll be, you know, tears will start welling up in his eyes. He's got a knack for that. He's great at that. And Heyman grabs the microphone, and before he could speak, Roman had one more question for him. And he said, why are you protecting Brock Lesnar from me? And Heyman finally spoke up, and he said, my tribal chief, I'm not protecting Brock Lesnar from you. He said, I'm protecting you from Brock Lesnar. And it's funny, he looked up to God above before he said that, because he knew that he was about to offend Roman Reigns, and it was almost like he was saying, please let this go okay before I say this. And then he said what he said. And he said, I'm sorry. He goes, you wanted the truth. I'm sorry. And Roman says, I love you, wise man. And he comes in and he brings him in for a big hug. He goes, Heyman was great. He goes, I love you too, my tribal chief. And Roman is saying, and I thank you for your honesty, and I thank you. And you can hear Heyman go, I thank you too. Thank you, my tribal chief. I love you, my tribal chief. He goes, I thank you for your honesty, and I thank you for your 40 years of loyalty to my family. And he says, and you're fired. And he delivers a Superman punch to Paul Heyman. Down goes Heyman. Reigns asks for a steel chair. And one of the Usos, I think it was Jay, hands him a chair, but he wants another one. And Jay goes and fetches a second steel chair to bring into the ring. Roman took the first chair and placed it under Paul. Paul was face down on the mat. And so he took the chair, placed it under Heyman's face, and was about to give him a one-man concerto. When Brock Lesnar's music hits, and out comes Brock, Farmer Brock, back in his overalls with the flannel shirt underneath. It's quite the look, I must say. And Roman sends the Usos out to attack, and Brock meets him in the aisleway, and he clotheslines Jey Uso. He gives what I can only describe as a suplex DDT, like an implant DDT. Like, he went to go suplex Jimmy, but he had him in such a position where he basically spiked him. He basically DDT'd him right on his head. F5 on the floor to Jey. Jimmy hits a super kick, but Brock just shook it off. He totally no-sold it. Picked up Jimmy, hit an F5 to him on the floor. Lesnar slides into the ring. Roman starts pounding on him with the chair. Brock, though, manages to get him up for the F5. Hits the F5. Crowd wants to see one more time. So he picks up Roman Reigns. He delivers a second F5. Leaves him laying right next to Paul Heyman. And the crowd was going nuts for this. The reaction that this got was fantastic. The place was going crazy. So they gave away the tease of any drama at the pay-per-view with Paul Heyman 2 weeks before day one. And if you remember last week, I said one of the things I was looking forward to was, how is the Heyman story going to play out on January 1st? Is he going to be with Roman Reigns? Is he going to go to Brock Lesnar? What are they going to do with Paul Heyman? The whole story really ties into Paul Heyman. He is the tie that binds between these two men. In which direction are they going to go in with this? And then, unexpectedly, tonight, they went and had Roman Reigns fire Paul Heyman and lay him out. And I'm thinking, okay, well, they took all the drama out of that. But as I look at what they did here, it seems pretty obvious to me what is going on here and what we're going to get at day one. Paul Heyman is going to walk into day one with Brock Lesnar. And he's going to walk out of day one with Roman Reigns. This is all part of a grand swerve that will see Paul Heyman realigned with the bloodline and helping Roman Reigns to retain the Universal Championship at the pay-per-view. It has to be. And that gives them the out when Lesnar does not win the championship, because he already got screwed over. You know, the Usos interfered in his match at Crown Jewel. You can't really do that again. So I've been thinking, what can they do with Brock where he loses again? But you don't just repeat the same finish that you did in October. Because it doesn't feel like the right time yet to beat Roman. He's been dominant for so long. How do you beat Brock a second time but make it different? Well, there you go. Paul Heyman swerves everybody, even though a lot of people already see it coming, I think. I mean, we're talking about it now. But I think that's where this is headed at the pay-per-view. And at that point, you know, the question is, do they still go with Roman and Lesnar again at WrestleMania? I think they probably do. You know, that could give Brock a hell of an incentive to want to murder these people, that he may have to go on to win the Royal Rumble to get that shot. So we could very well see Brock Lesnar winning the Royal Rumble this year. But that's where I think they're going with this. I thought the closing angle was excellent, as have been pretty much everything that Roman and Heyman and Lesnar have been involved with going back to when Brock came back at SummerSlam. Outside of the main event, I thought this show was fucking awful. Just thought this was a lousy episode overall. Outside of this, a lousy episode of SmackDown. And I don't know, that person on my timeline earlier who told me SmackDown was must-see TV must be on some heavy prescription medication. They might have to lower the dosage, or depending on what kind of medication it is, perhaps raise the dosage. Although I'm not giving out any medical advice here. But I will say they have done a very good job of making Reigns and Lesnar feel like a major main event, even though we have seen it about half a dozen times. We just saw it in October. What can they do to make this feel somewhat fresh and interesting? And I feel like they've done a good job of that. I'm excited for the match. I'm interested to see what happens in the match. It feels like a major big-time match, and apparently tickets are selling well for that show, probably on the back of this match. I cannot imagine that tickets are suddenly surging in the Atlanta market for this show. I think they have about 8,000 or 9,000 tickets sold, which is not a sellout, but it's a pretty healthy number for WWE these days when it comes to the smaller buildings. I say smaller relative to the big, you know, dome shows and the stadiums they do. I mean, they run these NBA buildings, which can fit 20,000 people. They're not putting 20,000 people in these buildings. Even with the stage and the set and everything else, you know, they should be getting 13, 14,000. They're not getting that a lot. But I think the reason is people are buying into this as a big-time main event. You know, they want to see Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns because it is the best thing going right now in WWE. The problem is it involves somebody who's not even a full-time performer. So when this runs its course, what do they have? You know, we know they're not doing Roman Reigns and Jeff Hardy on SmackDown. So, I mean, where do you go from here? And what else do you have on Raw and on SmackDown that can deliver this kind of hype and get people, I think, as interested and as invested as Lesnar and Reigns? Because right now, I don't see what that is. They don't really have anything else, especially over on the Raw side. But that was SmackDown. Groovy Goose says SmackDown is must-see span TV. They have similar ratings. Hey, look, SmackDown, look, they did over 2 million viewers last week. And maybe these aren't the numbers that Fox envisioned when they first got in bed together a couple of years ago. But if you're doing over 2 million viewers, then you're doing okay. I mean, SmackDown goes up, it goes down. You know, but again, the ratings don't correlate to the quality of the show. SmackDown, you know, there was a period of time, even a few months ago, where I would have said, man, SmackDown is so much better than Raw. You know, Raw has the extra hour. So I can't sit here and tell you that SmackDown is worse than Raw, because I don't believe that. That's not true. But I think people's view of SmackDown in some cases, I mean, some people might like SmackDown. Good for you if you do. But I think some people's judgment on that is a little kind of shaded by the Roman Reigns stuff. And they automatically think, well, SmackDown's great, right? Because we got this going on. But when you really look at the show and you strip away the top program, what do you have left? I mean, look at the shows they've given you over the last few weeks. You're going to call SmackDown a must-see show? You think SmackDown is that much better than Monday Night Raw? I got news for you. It's not. It's almost as bad. Have the talent. It doesn't have to be that way, but it is. So when SmackDown is over, you know what we do on Fridays. We flip on over. We flip on over. Hey, what's going on, Joseph Brooks? Dropping $4.99. We jump on over to TNT. And there you go. AEW Rampage. Which is also not must-see TV, for the record. It's an easy hour of wrestling television, though, that does not usually insult my intelligence. But I would not call Rampage must-see TV any more than I would call SmackDown must-see TV, just to be fair. But it opened with the Young Bucks and Adam Cole and Bobby Fish against best friends Trent Beretta, Chuck Taylor, Orange Cassidy, and Rocky Romero from Chaos. New Japan Pro Wrestling. They just announced the lineups this week for Wrestle Kingdom. Night 1, Night 2, and the New Japan versus Pro Wrestling Noah card on Night 3. Because they're doing a smaller version of Wrestle Kingdom Night 3 a few days later in a smaller arena, not in the Tokyo Dome. So they announced the full cards this week. Rocky Romero's in a few of those matches. I'll get into the cards on the podcast this weekend and talk about Shibata as well, because Shibata's coming back for a match. Chuck Taylor and Matt Jackson started out, and Chuck hit the standing slice bread for an early near fall. Rocky got the tag, hit Matt with the step-up Hurricane Rana, and Matt quickly tagged out to Bobby Fish, one half of the hopefully very soon reformed, hopefully soon to be reformed, Red Dragon. He's already got the music. He's only missing the partner. Orange Cassidy and Adam Cole tagged into the match. They are building to a match, which is going to happen next week on Dynamite. They're building to Adam Cole one-on-one against Orange Cassidy. So they tag into this match, and the people are excited to see them go one-on-one here. And Adam Cole thinks better of it. He tags out to Nick Jackson. On the floor, the Bucks and Cole delivered an apron powerbomb to Trent. They protected him, though. They powerbombed him on the flat portion of the apron. It was not an apron powerbomb on the edge to his surgically repaired neck. That would have been dumb. Back inside, the heel superkicked Cassidy. And at that point, they cut to their first picture-in-picture break. They come back. Adam Cole sets up Cassidy for the running double superkick from the Bucks, but Best Friends tripped up the Bucks as they hit the ropes and pulled him out to the floor. Cassidy cradled Cole for a near fall, and he countered a Panama Sunrise attempt. Got the hot tag to Beretta. A Devin from NJ with the poor Seth Rollins here in his in the super chat, getting a little ill there. He should take a COVID test. Hopefully it's not Omicron. Beretta catches Cole with a spear on the floor. Diving splash on Nick Jackson for a near fall. Romero and Beretta hit a double knee strike to Nick Jackson. Best Friends hit the half and half soul food combo on Cole. And Beretta went up to the middle rope. Yanked off, though, hit his surgically repaired neck on the turnbuckle. The Bucks and Cole hit a triple team neck breaker on Beretta. Bobby Fish came in with a top rope splash. Another near fall. Fish hit an avalanche falcon arrow on Trent, but Orange Cassidy broke up the pin attempt. Cassidy set up for the orange punch. Cole caught him, though. Rocky Romero hit a heel kick on Cole. Everybody hit dives. We got dive central here at this point in the match. We got one dive over here. You get a dive. You get a dive. You get to dive. Everybody did a dive. Cassidy landed an orange punch on Matt Jackson. Trent hit the strong zero on Bobby Fish and got the pin. Boy, you know, Bobby Fish was brought into this company. We know exactly why Bobby Fish was brought into this company, because all he has been doing is looking up at the lights. Another reason why, I don't think just for O'Reilly's sake, I think for Bobby Fish's sake, he better hope and pray and get on his hands and knees and hope to the heavens above that Kyle O'Reilly signs a contract with AEW. Because, boy, is this guy, you talk about eating the pin each and every single week. That is all that Bobby Fish has been doing. Let's see, one match maybe since he's come to AEW. Hey, Drew Johnson just dropped $50 here on the stream. He's not doing the JLB. It says, Solomonster, you're the man. No, you're the man for that super chat. Fuck. Thank you, Drew. Yeah, Tuxedo, I don't know offhand how many times Fish has been pinned in AEW. I think it's more than the fingers I have on this hand. He has been pinned quite a few times. I mean, look, you're not going to pin Adam Cole at this point. Bobby Fish is the odd man out. But again, just another reason why I think he would be much better served being in a tag team than in the singles ranks right now. But it was a much-needed win here in this match for Trent, coming back after such a long layoff from his injury. Big win for him. No hints of any friction here among the Best Friends. We had that interview backstage last week where it was just I can't even call it dissension in the ranks. I mean, it was just sort of a look. When he got cut off, I think, by Orange Cassidy in his promo before the main event, it was a look that Trent gave that sort of hinted that maybe there could be trouble brewing on the horizon, and there still might be, but there was no hint of that tonight. They worked together as a cohesive unit. He picked up the win for his team. All was well. And, good opener. I thought it was a good opener. Dan Lambert was back. We haven't seen him since Full Gear. Well, Dan Lambert was back on the show tonight. And he cut an in-ring promo. He was joined by the men of the year, Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. And he goes on this rampage, no pun intended, talking about Tony Khan and calling him two-faced, and he's going on about giving title matches to undeserving EVP. And I get that it fits the story because, you know, Scorpio Sky wants to challenge for the TNT title, and instead Cody is going to be challenging for the title next week on Rampage, a special Saturday Rampage against Sammy Guevara. So it's not like he was just throwing these lines out for no reason, but I am sick of the work shoots from Dan Lambert. I feel like I've gotten my fix of the work shoot stuff from Lambert. He was just going on and on about a lot of the same stuff that I feel like we've heard about 1,000 times. Undeserving EVPs, and he's going after Cody Rhodes. Now, this brought out Cody to, of course, booze. And I think one of the reasons why Cody also is so easily booed by a lot of people is, you know, they view him and his character as being very pretentious. He has this big entrance, which takes forever for him to come out. And I think people resent him even for the entrance. That's another reason why people, I think, started turning against this guy. So they boo him when he comes out, and not even, it wasn't even like really enthusiastic boos. It's just like, ah, boo, Cody's here, boo. You know, when you can't get cheered, even against Dan Lambert, who's like the biggest heat magnet in this entire company, you are fucked. That's all I can say. You can't even get cheered against Dan Lambert. You are fucked. There was a sign in the crowd that said, heel Cody equals ratings. I don't know about ratings, but heel Cody is the way to go. So Cody gets in the ring, and he steals the microphone out of Lambert's hand. And then Lambert steals the microphone out of his hand, and he steals the microphone out of Lambert's hand. And I guess this was supposed to be funny. I just thought this got old very quickly. And then without saying a word, Cody attacked the Men of the Year. He was quickly overwhelmed, though. Dustin Rhodes ran in to save his brother. He, too, ends up getting overwhelmed. And after being distracted by Dan Lambert, he gets overwhelmed. Here comes Sammy Guevara, the TNT champion. He comes in. He hits a double jump cutter off the ropes to Scorpio Sky. He runs off the heels. He stares down Cody, who's, you know, kind of sitting down in the corner. Those two are going to meet for the TNT title next Saturday night, Christmas night. They're going to be for the championship. I wasn't really a fan of this segment. It did, you know, I didn't think it was all that great. You know, it served a purpose in terms of putting the focus on Cody and Sammy coming out and saving him, but not a fan of the segment. We had Ty Conti with Anna Jay in her corner against Penelope Ford with The Bunny in hers in a submission match. And if you know about her Brazilian jiu-jitsu background, this match here should have been over with. Realistically, this should have been over with in 30 seconds. But it went 5 minutes. Conti jumped Ford before the bell. This is like the feud that'll never end. Conti jumped Ford before the bell. She got a half crab early on. The Bunny, though, helped Ford get to the ropes for the break. Outside, Ford was chopping Conti up against the ring post. But she got greedy, and she threw one last chop, and Ty ducked out of the way, and Ford chopped the ring post. Back inside, Conti went for an armbar. Penelope got to the ropes for a break. And Penelope went for a backhand spring elbow. Conti, though, got the knees up, went for a triangle. Ford broke free. Conti tried for a submission move, and the Bunny hopped up on the apron to distract the referee. Ford locked in a dragon sleeper. Conti kneed her way out of it, and Penelope landed a cutter. Conti hit a pump kick, went for another one, but Ford countered with a heel kick. Conti locked on what looked like a chicken wing, and Penelope Ford tapped out. So the right winner here, again, given her background, realistically, this should not have lasted even as long as it did. After the match was over, Bunny hit Conti with the brass knuckles, which is probably the most tired gimmick right now in this company. You know, it got to a point where in Kenny Omega matches, the Bucks interfering and Brandon Cutler and the cold spray, that was the most tired gimmick in this company. Well, it's the brass knucks from the Bunny. Anna Jay ran in with a chair to clear the ring. And, you know, I just wrote down, is this really continuing? Is this really not over after Ty Conti won in the submission match? Can we not be done with this, please? This is the feud that will never, ever end. Please do the tag team match already. Maybe we'll get it next week. And let's move on from this. The main event was Eddie Kingston, the Lucha Brothers, Santana and Ortiz. Hey, look who it is. It's Santana and Ortiz. I had forgotten they were even still employed by this company. It's nice to see that they're still with AEW. We never see them. They took on Daniel Garcia 2.0 and The Acclaimed. As I said at the beginning, I think it was overkill. Having an 8-man tag and a 10-man tag bookending this 1-hour show. Kingston and the Babyfaces attacked the heels on their way to the ring. Max Kapster was in the middle of a rap. He didn't get very far into the rap. We heard a line about the CIA and JFK, and then here come the baby faces, and they attacked in the aisleway. So there was a lot of brawling around the ringside area before the bell even rang. Caster took a beating from the Lucha Bros. Santana and Ortiz hit some tandem offense on Anthony Bowens as they went to the final picture-in-picture break. They come out of the break, Penta hot tags into the match, hits a sling blade. They knock Bowens off the apron, and then Penta caught Caster with a kick to the face. Phoenix came in and just started kicking the shit out of everybody. And then he hit a tornillo, twisting splash off the top. He missed most of it. He missed about 97% of this move. But he did land with his knee, which smashed Daniel Garcia in the face. He looked glassy-eyed. And the pin got broken up. Pin attempt. 2.0 started beating on Kingston outside the ring. So Penta and Phoenix hit stereo dives out onto Parker and Lee. Inside, Bowens took down Ortiz. Santana hit him with a pile driver. Caster hit a diving crossbody. It was like this rapid-fire succession where everybody was getting their shit in here. Caster hit a diving crossbody off the top on Santana, and Kingston came back in with a suplex to Caster. Ugh. But then Daniel Garcia came up from behind Eddie Kingston and rolled him up with the trunks and pinned him. The announcers were confused, too. They didn't realize that the match was over. Like, we saw the referee count three, but the announcers treated it like what? Like, they didn't really, it didn't compute that he actually scored the winning fall. So the heels all swarmed Eddie Kingston. Bowens grabbed the boombox, handed it to Daniel Garcia, who hit Kingston with it. Jurassic Express's music hit, all eyes on the tunnels. But instead, Jungle Boy in his leather jacket comes through the crowd from behind and attacks the heels. Luchasaurus was with him. They wiped out all the bad guys, and then Jungle Boy picked up the AEW Tag Team titles, and he handed them back to Penta and Rey Fénix. There was a moment. There was a stare down here between the two teams. Penta and Rey Fénix gave them a fist bump back out of respect, and they teased an upcoming Tag Team title match between the Lucha Bros and Jurassic Express, who are the number one ranked team at the moment in AEW. And we got a very quick cut to the aisleway where Eddie Kingston was chasing Daniel Garcia to the back as the show came to a close. You know, that main event was not my cup of tea. It just felt like they were cramming a lot of shit in, you know, just trying to fit everything in to get to what ended up coming off as a very underwhelming finish. And the fact that the announcers even didn't even recognize it at first as the finish just made it worse. Maybe it was that way by design, but on this taped show, and maybe they could have redone some of the commentary, I don't know, but I don't know. It was them cramming a lot of shit in to get to what I thought was just a very lame finish. A rare win, albeit via cheating, a rare win for Daniel Garcia. Actually, I think that might have been his first win on TV. I don't know about Dark and Elevation, but as far as SmackDown. As far as Dynamite and Rampage, I do believe that was his first television win. And that keeps the feud with Kingston alive, I guess, for a singles match. So we got a bunch of rapid-fire announcements on the show tonight. Actually, right before the main event, Excalibur did the voiceover. They were so rapid-fire. You know, Excalibur talks so fast because he has to squeeze so much shit in. He talks so fast, it's so hard sometimes to really keep up with, okay, we're going to announce these matches for Dynamite and these matches for Rampage. And, oh, we're going to talk about the Owen Hart tournament. Well, that's why you got me here, because I got all the announcements here all written down for you, in case you missed it. Now, Tony Khan originally had said weeks ago that they would reveal details about the Owen Hart tournament. They're going to have this thing called the Owen, and that they were going to reveal information about it on the Winter is Coming episode of Dynamite. Well, we got the Winter is Coming episode of Dynamite on Wednesday, and there was no mention at all from Tony Khan or anybody else about the Owen Hart tournament. So I thought, well, that's kind of strange. Maybe something fell through. Maybe they were waiting on Kevin Owens to see what was going to happen with him, and then they found out that, shit, he's staying in WWE. I don't know. But there was no mention of the Owen Hart tournament on Wednesday. Well, today, we got some more information. They announced that there would be not one, but two tournaments. We're going to have a men's Owen Hart tournament and a women's Owen Hart tournament. And if you hear that and think, well, we're in the middle of a women's tournament right now. We're still in the middle of this TBS tournament. They're going to have another one? calm down. They're not doing this for several more months. In fact, they announced that these tournaments are going to be taking place in May. So we got a while before we get to the Owen Hart tournament. May, of course, is not only the month that Owen Hart passed away. It was May 23rd, 1999, but that was also the month of his birth. I believe May 7th, I believe, is his birthday. So I have to assume it's tied in maybe with his birthday. That's why they're doing it in May. The finals of both of these tournaments will happen at Double or Nothing, which I guess this whole COVID situation pending, hopefully they'll bring Double or Nothing back to Vegas. Yeah, they haven't been able to have Double or Nothing in Vegas since the first one. I was at the first one. It was a lot of fun being there out in Vegas, and they haven't been back since because of all this bullshit that's been going on. So hopefully by then they'll be back in Vegas for Double or Nothing. But I think it's great. I don't have any issue with them having one for the men and one for the women. I'm sure there's a lot of women on that roster who are going to want to be part of this every bit as much as the men. There's going to be a lot of people requesting and asking, I'm sure, to be part of these tournaments because it means something to people. It's a special thing, you know, to find out that you're going to be part of this in tribute to Owen Hart, I'm sure is very meaningful to a lot of people. So I don't have an issue with that. And I assume that, you know, Owen's family, his wife, his kids will be there to present the trophies to the winners. It would be nice if Brett was there as well. I know Brett and Martha do not get along. They had a falling out many years ago, so I don't know how Owen's wife feels about that. Maybe he won't be there, but anyway, May is when we are looking at having both of those tournaments. So, and they said they will have more information about them next week on Dynamite. So they're dragging this out. They're saving some more information about this for next week. Maybe they'll show us an image of what the trophies are going to look like. Now, Dynamite next Wednesday has Orange Cassidy against Adam Cole, Griff Garrison against Malakai Black, a Christmas party with Britt Baker and Tony Schiavone, Nyla Rose against Ruby Soho in the semifinals of the TBS title tournament, and Sting wrestling his first match in 27 years in Greensboro, teaming with Darby Allin and CM Punk against MJF and FTR. Rampage next week airs on Saturday at 9 p.m., not Friday at 10, Saturday, Christmas night, 9 p.m. Hook is back. Here I said last week, they should not have Hook wrestle all that often. I would put some distance between Hook's matches, make it really feel special. Well, Hook's already back in action. He's going to go one-on-one with Bear Bronson, and Sammy Guevara defends his TNT title against Cody Rhodes. The other announcement is that it is official. Britt Baker is going to defend her AEW Women's Championship against Riho at the Battle of the Belts special on TNT January 8th. So that is the first match made official for Battle of the Belts. Tony Khan was on Busted Open Radio earlier this morning, and he did confirm, basically, he confirmed that there will be a rematch between Bryan Danielson and Hangman Page. Rematches are not something that AEW does a lot of. So there was some question. Are they going to go back to the match, or are they going to move on to something else without giving Danielson the loss? You go to a 60-minute draw, Danielson moves on to someone else, Hangman moves on to someone else. It seemed pretty obvious they were setting up for a rematch, and it's not official yet, but my guess is Battle of the Belts, maybe a 2 out of 3 falls match or some kind of stipulation like that. So those were the big announcements that were made on the show tonight. Tuxedo says, cashing in on Hookamania. I think Hookamania is going to be around for a while. I don't think they have to worry about it fizzling out quite that quickly. Well, let's see how these polls compare. We have two polls for two shows tonight, so let's see. Over on SmackDown, 44% thumbs up, 55.6% thumbs down. I would wager all 44% strictly for the Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman stuff. I'm not sure I would have even gone that high on that show. So that's the SmackDown poll. Over on the AEW side, Rampage, 79.4%. Look at this. It's moving as we speak. 79.5% thumbs up, 20% thumbs down for Rampage at Solomonster. You kind of see it there at the top of the screen. At Solomonster is the handle. You guys can go vote over there. Let me know what you think, what you thought of both of these shows tonight. And as we usually do, take a look at your Super Chats. That's what we're going to do. We're going to read your questions and comments and what you thought about this stuff tonight. Overall, pretty uneventful Friday night of wrestling outside of the main angle on SmackDown. Really wasn't that much to get excited about. You know what I'm excited about? Nayef Alsafar. Drop at $9.99. Thank you, Nayef. Thunderblade Liger with the $5 Super Chat wants to know, buy or sell, in 1997, NWO or D-Generation X in 1999? I would go NWO. NWO. I probably was more of a DX fan in 98, honestly. I thought once Triple H took the group over and was doing, you know, stuff in the early days with the tank and all that, going around the streets in New York City with X-Pac and China and the New Age Outlaws. To me, that was the real kind of glory period of DX. But I'd buy on the NWO. Hey, Rick's in the chat. I don't have a lot of salads. Ain't no salad monster here. Jolly Burgos, $10 Super Chat. As a general rule, I hate ties and draws. I hate it in the NFL, and it's a big reason why I don't watch soccer. If you can't have a clear winner, then don't have the match, or does that rule only apply to WWE? No, you're entitled to that opinion. I think the comparison is stupid. You know, they gave us a quality 60-minute match, and I can't hate on that. And I mean, me personally, I called it in advance, so I knew it was coming. So it didn't come as a shock to me. But the actual 60 minutes, I was never bored. I thought it was one of the best TV matches they've ever produced. I look forward to the rematch. I had no issue with it. If you don't like ties and draws, then you're more than welcome to that. If WWE gave us a quality 60-minute match that went to a draw and didn't give us a decisive winner, but I liked the match, I'd feel the same way. So, that's the best answer I can give. Thunderblade Liger, should Davey Boy Smith Jr. be in the Owen Hart Cup? I mean, I think that would be kind of cool if he was part of it. I don't know how the AEW talents would feel if they just kind of brought him in to be in there when, you know, if he's not a full-time active part of the roster. WWE did let him go. Without using him, he is available. So if they bring him into the company, absolutely, I would put him in that tournament. I don't know that I would bring him in, though, just to be in the tournament and nothing more. That I don't know if I would do that. Ojali, also, between Kevin Owens re-signing and the Meyer mess, a continuous bad ratings. It's been a rough week for good old TK. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. You're showing your bias there. Ojali is no fan of AEW, in case you couldn't figure it out. So, there you go. Griga, $1.99 Super Chat. Thank you, Griga. Ojali, again, on a more positive note, it feels like WWE has done more non-title stories with pay-per-view matches these past few months for the women than in recent years. A few more, you know, like the Naomi Sonya Deville thing. Not all good ones. But I always said, like, it didn't make any sense why you would just focus on the champions and nobody else. It was like, with the women, you're only allowed to have one program, and it's the program that the champions are involved in, and that never really made any sense to me. Why can't you have two, three, four different ones going all at the same time? So, it is a little bit better now than it was at one time. It was almost like you weren't allowed to do that. Shaquille Oatmeal. $5 Super. That might be my new favorite name after Bret Hart. We have Shaquille. Who would win in a battle between Bret Hart and Shaquille Oatmeal? $5 super chat. Could you see Brian as the TNT champion? If so, do you think they should do Danielson against Omega 2 for the TNT title of Grand Slam 2? Brother, I'm not even thinking of Grand Slam 2 a year from now. Could Brian be the TNT champion? Absolutely. Is that something I would do anytime soon? No, because he doesn't need it. Yeah, that's the thing with him. He doesn't need it. But when the time comes, there could be a time where he gets it, and then he gets to wrestle all these different people, these young guys, and that can make it fun. Hey, Dragon Beast, thank you for subbing to the channel. Appreciate it. But the TNT title is it's not anything that he needs. I think you're better off right now having that title on someone like a Sammy Guevara, on some of the young pillars of that company. But why does Bryan Danielson need to have your secondary championship? Food Hive can't join live as I am catering, but I had to show love to my chat and you. Much love to all of you for what was dinner? Not Chinese or Sarah. It was Chinese, actually. It's Friday night. That's a Chinese night. Shaquille Oatmeal again, $5 super chat. If you could repackage Ricochet on WWE television, what would be the character? I think some promo work. He would pull off a suave heel named Rico. Appreciate you. You need to go back and find the podcast I did. It was either earlier this year or it might have been late last year. I pitched this whole idea for Ricochet as this brooding, I don't even know if it would be a heel or more of a tweener. It is sort of a playoff of what Sting was doing when he first took over the Crow character and started doing the Crow character in WCW. Where Ricochet would just sort of be this brooding guy who would be up in the rafters or the upper deck or something, and he wouldn't speak because promos are not his strong suit. But he would just sort of hang out and be pissed off of the world because he was going on a pretty bad losing streak there for a while. But then, you know, in the ring, he would let his wrestling do the talking, and you let Ricochet do Ricochet things. When you let Ricochet be himself and wrestle Ricochet-type matches, he'll get over because he can do things in there that are just spectacular. And WWE hasn't done enough of that, letting him go out there and just do what he does best. But I think if he had this sort of brooding character that didn't really speak and had this kind of attitude problem, but then when he's in the ring, he's just fucking unbelievable. And he starts winning and going on a winning streak. That's all you need to do to get Ricochet going. Don't send him out there with corny comedy and lame one-liners and stuff like that. That's not how he's going to get over. You're only going to make it harder for him. I don't remember the episode number, but I went through this whole idea. Whether they do it or not, probably not. Tonight he was in the background as everybody was kissing the fingers of Xavier Woods. So that's apparently what they came up with for Ricochet. Quintus Brown, $5 super chat. Can't stay for the stream. I'm heading out to see Spider-Man. Both shows were meh. I hope Reigns does not lose the title at day one. I see a lot of positive reaction to Spider-Man. Hulkling 93, submission match wasn't good. Instead of a 50-50 match, I feel the story was primed for Ty to own Penelope with her BJJ background in quick fashion. I agree. Ren Silver, $5 super chat. Do you think if Damian Priest wins the Royal Rumble, there would be enough time for him to be built up to challenge and beat Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, or is it too soon? Yes, way too soon. He is not wrestling Roman Reigns or WrestleMania, nor is he winning the Royal Rumble. His time will come, but absolutely not going to happen, and not the right time. I think he'll be defending the U.S. title at WrestleMania against Austin Theory. That's my early prediction. Actually, I think of those two, if anybody was going to win the Royal Rumble of the two names I just mentioned, there's a better chance Austin Theory wins it rather than Damian. And I don't think either one of them are winning it, but I think there's a better chance that it's Theory and not Priest because Theory is doing whatever the hell it is that he's doing with Vince McMahon on TV. He's kind of like Vince McMahon's pet project now on TV. Better chance of him winning it than Damian Priest. Andrew Lima, my girlfriend walked in on me. Oh, I don't know where the super chat is going. My girlfriend walked in on me watching the Happy Talk segment. Actually, that's worse than where I thought this was going. And for the first time in 10 years, I was embarrassed to be watching wrestling. That was the first time in 10 years that made you embarrassed to be watching wrestling. That segment, that's the first time in 10 years that you've been embarrassed to watch a WWE show. Joseph Brooks, which factions had the better year, The Shield in 2013 or The New Day in 2015? Nothing tops The Shield. The Shield in 2013 into the beginning of 2014. Shield was the shit. Joseph Brooks, which factions had the... Oh, I just read that. Tuxedo T. Servo, thank you for the $5. I think I mentioned that earlier. The Phenom. 390 Super Chat. Hey, Solo Monster, you're my top streamed podcast on Spotify. What is your favorite Iron Man match ever done? Mine is Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart at WrestleMania 12. Mine is Triple H and The Rock at Judgment Day in 2000. Joseph Brooks, what do you think of Moose in Impact and his promo work? Did you hear that promo last month when he shot a little bit on WWE? I like Moose as the kind of heel champion in Impact. It's nice to see them, giving him a shot. I think his ring work has improved tremendously. What I've seen of him this year as compared to a few years ago, he's made a lot of improvements. His promos aren't that great, I don't think. You know, and him shooting on WWE, he wasn't really shooting. I mean, he had a few lines in there. Everybody made a big deal about it. I watched it and I just thought, what's the big deal? Like, it wasn't... People made such a big deal about that promo. I didn't see what the big deal was. So, his promos are not his strong suit. But in the ring, his matches, he has improved from where he used to be. Devin from New Jersey, 2000. Buy or sell, which WWE crutch do you prefer? Talk shows or authority figures? Also, what in your opinion is the greatest talk show in WWE history? Of those two choices, I would prefer talk shows over authority figures, because heel authority figures are fucking played out. But even the talk shows, we had Miz TV. We had Miz TV. Didn't we have two Miz TVs? I feel like we had back-to-back Miz TVs. We had Miz TV last week with Edge. Now we're getting the Cutting Edge on Raw this Monday with Maurice. This is all that they know how to do. Because Edge is not going to wrestle on TV. So, you're not going to have Edge wrestling and then Miz interferes in his match and costs him the match or something. So all they can do are like dueling talk show segments. I would still take that over heel authority figures, though. Greatest talk show in WWE history? I mean, look, you can't really beat Piper's Pit. I think Piper's Pit is sort of... It's got to be number one. Right? There have been so many of them, though. Piper's Pit, Rogers Corner with Buddy Rogers, the Snake Pit, the Funeral Parlor, the Heartbreak Hotel, Carlito's Cabana, and then, of course, some of the newer ones, Miz TV and The Cutting Edge, and Kevin Owens and the KO Show. I mean, there's so many of them now, they're just kind of lame. I really started losing interest in these talk show segments when they stopped giving them their custom sets in the back of the arena. Piper's Pit had a custom set. Heartbreak Hotel had a custom set. The Funeral Parlor, the Snake Pit. Now it's just a couple of chairs in the ring with some lame fucking cardboard sign that cost $5 to make. I don't know. Happy Talk. Fucking Happy Talk now with fucking Baron Corbin every week. Who gives a shit? They used to be much better. They used to put some thought and creativity into these things. The highlight, even the highlight reel, at least they had the Geritron 6000 or whatever it was. You know, when he used it, he threw Shawn Michaels into it, and Shawn Michaels got the googly eye, right? That was the whole storyline. Piper's Pit. To answer your question, Piper's Pit. Oh, the barbershop. Of course, how could I forget the barbershop? The barbershop has the most memorable, angle or incident in WWE history. but there was really only one barbershop segment worth talking about. Piper's Pit, there were multiple Piper's Pit segments. But of course, how could I forget the barbershop? The Ambrose Asylum, was that a thing? I don't even remember. The Ambrose Asylum, was that an actual show? Drew Johnson, thank you again for that 50 spot, brother. I appreciate that. That brightened my day here on a Friday night. Jeffrey Hall, $4.99 super chat. Rampage was definitely the best shell of the night. Seems like an autocorrect to me. Thanks for making my birthday a great night. You're the best. Well, happy birthday, Jeffrey. I'll excuse that autocorrect there. If you're out celebrating your birthday, then you might be seeing double right now. So I'll excuse you. But happy birthday. I hope your day was a fun one. The Flower Shop, yeah, I mean, the Flower Shop didn't last very long with Adrian Adonis. But yes, we had a flair for the gold in WCW. That was when Flair couldn't wrestle initially when he came back. He wasn't allowed to wrestle for WCW until later that year. So they gave him a flair for the gold. Actually, a flair for the gold gave us one of the most infamous segments in WCW history, the Shockmaster's debut. Our partner is going to shock the world. What a fucking segment that was. Drew Johnson, if Cody beats Sammy for the belt, I'm done. All hail Sammy Guevara. Nick Grosso, $9.99. How long do you think before we see Christian Cage turn heel? And where is Chris Jericho? Is he taking time off? Because I thought he would have made the save for Eddie Kingston. Chris Jericho is off in Europe. He is touring with Fozzy. He was in the hospital. He will not say why he was in the hospital. Maybe it was alcohol poisoning. Who knows? But apparently he's doing better. I guess the doctors told him they didn't want him to sing. They didn't want him to sing. There's a joke in there somewhere. So yeah, he's... I don't know if he's still there, but he was over in Europe doing shows with Fozzy. Paul Heyman. I'm still a little banged up from the Superman punch that I took from my tribal chief, but are you covering the Hannibal referee incident on Sunday? Yes, I am. That'll be on episode 735. I'm already hard at work on the rundown for episode 735. We have a lot to get into this Sunday. Patrick, $10 super chat. I wish my birthday weren't the anniversary of the McMahon family's lame promise. They made you a promise that they could not keep. Well, I'm here to wish you a happy birthday. That's a better birthday gift than WWE gave you tonight. Brock Benningfield, $4.99 super chat. WWE has better managers than AEW. Bivens, MVP, and Heyman are better than Vicky, Hardy, and 2/4 of the Horsemen. What say you? I'm going to agree. I'm going to agree. WWE's managers, they won't call them that, but that's what they are much stronger than the ones in AEW. AEW has more of them. But the ones that you mentioned, Heyman, MVP, Bivens, I guess those are the main three. I mean, who else would you count Boogs? I wouldn't even really count Boogs as like an actual manager. Although I guess he would be. But even those three that you mentioned, and I'm happy to see Bivens, you know, with Diamond Mine and NXT. Bivens has been there for so long. He wasn't doing anything. They signed him years ago. And so I'm happy to see him flourishing and doing well in NXT. He's always been a good talker. But I would agree. I would agree. Stronger managers than what AEW has. Even if AEW has more of them. Paul Heyman. Again. I'm calling it right now. Next year's Double or Nothing main event will be QT Marshall against Gunner. Boy, Roman must have hit you harder than I thought. Rowdy JJ, $4.99 super chat, was watching old Bret Hart matches in WCW. In your opinion, what was your favorite Bret Hart match in WCW? Well, it was kind of a melancholy one. Bret Hart against Chris Benoit. Owen Hart Memorial match on Nitro. Sad occasion, but they had a hell of a fucking match. Yeah, people pointing out Don Callis in the chat. Don Callis was probably the best manager that they had, the best active manager. But now he's taking a break. So he is off television. But even with Don Callis included, I think I still give the edge to WWE. I don't count Taz. Taz isn't really a manager. You know, he's a mouthpiece for Team Taz, but Team Taz doesn't really have a manager. Taz never goes down to the ring with them. You know, he's in the announce booth or he's standing back by the stage. So I don't really count him as a manager. Hulkling93, are you aware of the Cora J. Darby Allin Twitter battle? Cora really went for the jugular with her clapback. It's not much of a battle. I mean, Darby made a tweet. It was a reply to somebody asking him about skateboards or skateboard culture. And I think they may have asked about Cora J. doing a skateboard gimmick like he does. And he made a comment about how, you know, that's a fake TV character. And that's the real deal. What you see with him is what you get. I mean, I thought it was unnecessary to even bring her into the conversation. And then she posted a tweet saying, well, at least I'm not an abuser or something. And then she deleted it because she thought better of it. I think they both may have deleted their tweets. I don't really call that a win. I just think the whole fucking thing is sad. I don't know why he even brought her into it in the first place, to be honest with you. I mean, she didn't do anything. Joseph, $5 super chat. I mean, if Brock doesn't take the belt from Roman at WrestleMania, it has to be Drew, who beats Reigns at the untitled UK pay-per-view next September. Is that right? I don't know that they want to wait that long. I mean, who do they have? I mean, think about it. I mean, yes, in a perfect world, that'd be a great place to do it. But, I mean, you're talking about waiting until September. You're talking about waiting until Labor Day to take the championship away from Roman Reigns. Who does he wrestle for the next 8 months, 9 months? He can't wrestle Brock Lesnar every single month from now until September. I mean, even if the match in the UK, let's say Labor Day weekend, was the rematch, and the first match they do with Brock and Drew is at SummerSlam, you still have to get to SummerSlam. They have done a piss poor job of building people up to credibly challenge Roman Reigns. How do you do that? How do you fill the next 9 months? Tell me. I mean, I could pluck out names from NXT. I could pick out Bron Breakker and all these different, but they're probably not going to do that, number one. And number two, you still need time to establish those people on TV before you put them in the ring with Roman Reigns. So what are you going to do? You're going to have months and months of Roman Reigns against who on that SmackDown roster? Shinsuke Nakamura? Rick Boogs? Ricochet? Give me a fucking break. That's the problem. I don't think they can wait that long. I mean, my God, what is this next year going to look like? There's nobody else. There's nobody. We're going to have 9 months of Roman Reigns coming out talking about his sabbatical to Samoa every few weeks. I mean, my God. I mean, this is pathetic. I mean, I don't have an issue with them having a strong champion, but you got to have somebody on the back end there to challenge him that the people can actually look at and say, hey, I can believe that this guy might beat him for the belt. They don't have enough people. They just don't. I mean, even if Jeff Hardy didn't get fired, you might have gotten one or two pay-per-views out of him before WrestleMania, but even Jeff Hardy, I mean, that they still would have been in the same position. $10 super chat here from Magician Sapphire. Rampage to me is like a comfortable pair of shoes. Hardly anything extraordinary or flashy happens, but it's an easy, reliable watch, and I never feel like it insults my intelligence. Reminds me, during my Extreme Rules horror show review last July, I used an analogy, and I compared Dolph Ziggler to an old pair of socks. how WWE treats him. He's always there. And whenever they need him for something, you know that that reliable, comfortable old pair of socks is there to just slip right on. It's got a few holes in it. It's a little ratty. It stinks. But it's always there. And that's Dolph Ziggler. He says Rampage is like an old pair of shoes. I can see that. Annette in the chat, shout out to Annette, says, I would like it if my job was listening to Solomonster behind him, brushing his hair, and getting him a snack and a beverage as I listen to him in person. Let's move on here. Nick Grosso, $9.99 super chat. Buy or sell on the Better Heel promo in Canada, The Rock in 03 or Shawn Michaels in 05? Boy, you know, I think I had both of them on my list of the top nine promos in WWE history, which you can find on the YouTube channel. It's in a playlist. I ranked the top nine. I don't remember why it was top nine, but top nine promos in WWE history. I'm trying to remember how I ranked them, because those two were very close to each other. But I think I probably went with Shawn Michaels in 05. I think I gave the edge to the Michaels promo. I mean, you talk about heat. You talk about a heel reaction. And a guy who knew that he had the audience in the palm of his hand and soaking up every second of it. Oh, what a great promo. He didn't have to do much. Well, what a great segment that was. That was fantastic. Annette, I know. I appreciate it. We're just having some fun with you. Ojali Burgos, not biased. I think WWE, the company, and Vince are evil. And I just support the women. Tony Khan keeps hiring bad people like Lethal and the Briscoes, and no one seems to get... He hasn't brought in the Briscoes yet. Probably will. But I don't know that anything there is official just yet. I mean, look, if we want to start making a list of all the supposed bad people that work for these companies, we're going to be here for a while. Because you got them in WWE, you got them in AEW, and you got them in Impact, too. In fact, we were just talking about Moose a little while ago. So you want to go down that road, believe me, we can go down that road. Andrew Lima, $5 super chat. I'm not kidding, he says. Happy Talk made Bailey's This Is Your Life look like the pipe bomb, the CM Punk pipe bomb. Ouch. Joseph Brooks, $4.99 super chat. Buy or sell, which same finisher battle did you enjoy seeing? Bret Hart against Sting or Eddie Guerrero against RVD? Eddie and RVD. I always think of that ladder match where Eddie got yanked off the ladder by that dipshit fan. Was he wearing like an Oilers jersey or something? And then Earl Hebner's like, I don't think so. And he tackles that bald fucker to the ground. Should have kicked the shit out of him for doing it. Can you imagine? I mean, how lucky was Eddie Guerrero to not tear a knee out when that jerk off pulled him off the ladder? Or tried to shove, right? He tried to shove the ladder over? Fucking moron. Plus Ultra Adrian, $4.99 super chat, here to show support for your channel. Hope everything is well. Thank you, Adrian. Everything is going great here tonight. We're hanging out. We're talking SmackDown. We're talking Rampage. Let's see if we can get those likes up a little bit. Smash that like button. I didn't mention that before, but smash that like button. It helps the video out when you do. You should be able to hit 250 at least. At least. If not, I'm going to be very upset. EJ Slemp, $4.99 super chat. In honor of Spider-Man, buy or sell? Savage in Spider-Man or Hogan in Rocky 3? Also, are there any wrestler cameos in movies that people might not know about? I'm sure there are lots. I mean, none that I could think of off the top of my head. I mean, there's... Thinking of wrestling movies, wrestler cameos. I mean, there have been wrestlers that have popped up in movies like Nathan Jones and Kurgan and people like that. Someone mentioned Gremlins last week. Hulk Hogan had a brief cameo sitting in a movie theater wearing the WWF Winged Eagle title in Gremlins 2. But Savage and Spider-Man or Hogan and Rocky 3, Thunderlips. I mean, that was a big deal for Hogan. But Bonesaw McGraw in Spider-Man was quite great. I don't know. Me personally, I would go Bonesaw. I'd go Bonesaw. And Fernando Abreu, $5 super chat. The four pillars of AEW are mentioned often on television, but who, if anybody, would be listed as part of the four pillars of the future for WWE? Well, I already named one on the podcast the other day, Austin Theory. I think they're all in on Austin Theory. Now, in 6 months, I might look like a fool for saying that, and Austin Theory could be on the next wave of mass releases. But the way they're pushing him and the way they're featuring him and putting him in segments with Vince McMahon on TV, and, you know, he's progressed a lot from when I saw him back in Evolve many years ago. I think they look at him as one of their young pillars. And he's still a young guy. I think they look at him as one of their young pillars. So I would say Austin Theory, Rhea Ripley should be for the women. Bianca, well, Bianca's a little bit older. How is Bianca? Is Bianca 31, 32? Rhea's like 25. Like, Bianca's the here and now. Rhea should be the here and now as well. But she's young enough where I think you have to consider her one of the pillars, without a doubt. Those are the main two that come to mind for me. They've got a lot of other young talents, though, in NXT. Carmelo Hayes, I'm very bullish on his future. I think he's going to be a big deal. He's great. Bron Breakker is great. You know, I'm on the Bron train with everybody else. Terrible name, but I think he'll do well in spite of it. Behind the Fiends, $4.99 Super Chat. A program with Reigns and Styles on SmackDown would have been great. What do you think? I agree, but they still have AJ stuck in tag team hell for at least a few more months. You know, I think they might actually end up doing AJ against Omos one-on-one at WrestleMania. Whatever they do at WrestleMania, hopefully coming out of it, Styles will start to be featured more in the singles ring. He's not getting any younger. And you'll have to find a way to get him on SmackDown if you do that. I would love to see it. We saw Reigns and AJ together in a program. They did two back-to-back pay-per-view matches in 2016. A few months after AJ came into the company, right? It was right after WrestleMania. And I remember those matches being great. Those were excellent matches. So I would love to see it again. Was Bam Bam in Major Pain? I think I saw Major Pain once many years ago. I don't remember that at all. Maybe you're right. Yeah, Longest Yard had a bunch of wrestlers in there. Austin, Goldberg, I think, Kevin Nash. Kevin Nash is Super Shredder. Kevin Nash as Super Shredder is actually probably one of the bigger ones. Although that was, I'm trying to think if that predated him getting into wrestling. I think he had already gotten into wrestling at that point, I believe. Yeah, because if he was wrestling in 89 or 90, the second Ninja Turtles movie didn't come out until what, 91? 92 when they filmed it, probably? 92-ish? So he was already wrestling by that point. Or you got Big Show. That's right, Big Show in Captain Insano in The Waterboy. Big Show is also the giant Santa Claus guy in the warehouse in Jingle All the Way. I'm going to deck your halls, bub. He was in that movie as well. Undertaker in Suburban Commando.
You're a dead man, Ramsey.
Yeah, that's right. Remember that one? Terry Funk in Roadhouse. Jesse Ventura. Now it's all pouring out now. Jesse Ventura in Predator. Give me some more. Feed me more. What other cameos am I not remembering here? Movie cameos for wrestlers. We're not talking TV shows. We're talking movies. MacGruber. That's right. That MacGruber movie had a lot of wrestler cameos in it as well. I don't remember. I don't think I saw MacGruber. I know there's a new MacGruber TV show, I think. I believe. Lou Albano as Super Mario. You know, I used to watch that when I was younger. I used to watch the Super Mario Brothers Super Show with Captain Lou as Mario. Mario, I'm sorry. People get a tar and feather me for saying Mario. Super Mario. I used to watch that show all the time. China made a cameo in a movie? I'll bet she did. Thankfully, I didn't see that movie. Would The Rock count? I don't know. Should we count The Rock? What do you guys think? I heard The Rock has been in a few movies. I don't know if they did very well or not, but I think The Rock has been in a few as well. As has Batista. Triple H in the Blade movie. Was that Blade Trinity? I think it was Trinity. I want to say it was the Blade Trinity movie. It's a lot of wrestler cameos. All right, while you ponder more of them that we haven't talked about, let's move on to Be the Booker. We'll start with the men. Those of you who are new here, we take a few moments here to randomly book a pair of WrestleMania main events at the end of each stream and see what match we come up with and whether or not it's a match that we would like to see. I have no idea what it's going to land on. I have no idea if it's going to be a WWE person or an AEW person. We just sort of take it for a spin and see what we come up with. Andre the Giant in The Princess Bride, of course, of course. That may be the greatest of all. Well, let's see. We got Matt Riddle, the Shaman, for NXT's MSK, one half of the Raw Tag Team Champions. Matt Riddle in the WrestleMania main event, one-on-one, and his opponent will be Enzo Amore. We knew it was a fail as soon as I said Enzo Amore in the WrestleMania main event. So we move on to the ladies. Hopefully we'll have some better luck with the women. And let's see what our female WrestleMania main event is going to be. Stephanie McMahon. Well, why not? I mean, the McMahon's in the WrestleMania main event. I mean, it's not really that hard to believe. Stephanie McMahon will go one-on-one at WrestleMania with Jillian Hall. Boy, was this a fucking fail this week or what? Jesus, I don't think I could have done a worse job picking these matches. Holy shit. What happened this week? What happened? Jillian Hall against Stephanie McMahon and Enzo Amore against Matt Riddle. How can it be so bad? How is that possible? That is not how I wanted to end this night. Would book myself right into bankruptcy doing those matches. Anyway, all you people saying John Wick, by the way, I've never seen John Wick, so people are telling me Kevin Nash was in John Wick. I believe you, but I've never seen John Wick. I don't know who John Wick is. I'm sure he's a nice guy. Yeah. Maz said from Stone Cold versus Hangman to this. Yeah, we had Austin against Hangman Page the other day. And I thought that was pretty good. I could buy that as a WrestleMania match. And then we had whatever tonight was. Anyway, thank you for spending your Friday night with me. I hope you enjoyed this review more than you enjoyed SmackDown or maybe even Rampage. Rampage was okay. It was not great. SmackDown was awful outside of the Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns stuff, but I am excited for that whole match of day one and where things go with Paul Heyman, even though it seems like that swerve is coming from a mile away. We'll see if it pans out that way. John Wick is Keanu Reeves. Do you know that Keanu Reeves is being inducted, or if he wasn't already, actually, this week, inducted into the Canadian Walk of Fame? Do you know who else is being inducted into the Canadian Walk of Fame this week, along with Keanu Reeves? Bret the Hitman Hart, first wrestler ever to be inducted into the Canadian Walk of Fame. He was inducted by Chris Jericho. But Bret Hart and Keanu Reeves in the same induction class. We all know who the bigger star of the two is. But Keanu's a big name, too. He's kind of a big name, too. Behind the Fiends. Oh, I said Behind the Fiends. Hulkling93, $5 super chat. I still want to know why when you drew Maria versus Bull Nakano, it didn't get the buzzer. Well, because Bull Nakano was in the match. I mean, if Bull Nakano can bring it to at least a two-star match. Dr. NXT Scorpio, we have seen worse Mania matches, but this is a close second. We have seen some awful WrestleMania main events. We've seen, actually, a number of them. I could think of one from 2011 that comes to mind. John Wick is the best action series trilogy in the past 10 years. Really? Is it that good? I might have to put that on my watch list right after I watch Joker. I might have to watch John Wick. Yeah, Bret Hart and Keanu Reeves in the Hall of Fame. And Bret said that this Hall of Fame was a bigger deal to him than the WWE Hall of Fame. And he went into the Hall of Fame twice in WWE. But he said this meant more to him and this was a bigger deal because he's like a hero in Canada. So for him to go into the Canadian Walk of Fame really meant a lot to him. John Wick is kung fu and gunplay in one. So it's gung fu or gun fu. Well, I will watch Joker. I will. I will watch Joker. I promise I will watch Joker. Bash, no. What fan are you talking about? Mr. DC Comics, $5 super chat. Bobby Lashley will probably interfere in day one between Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. No, you know, Bobby Lashley is in the WWE Championship match. If he wasn't doing anything at day one, I would buy into that. I pitched the whole thing with Bobby Lashley. I had this whole idea mapped out for Lashley to get involved and cost Brock the title at day one, and then it builds to something with Brock and Lashley. Maybe they're in the Rumble together. They have a match. You know, at this point, it just doesn't look like it's something the WWE is, if not Brock, is all that interested in doing. So, would love to see it. And there's always a chance that Lashley does not win the championship at day one and just loses his mind and interferes in the WWE title match. I think there's a much better chance we get a Heyman swerve than any interference by Bobby Lashley. But if they want to go with the idea that I talked about a few weeks ago, I have no pride of authorship. Take it. Take it. I pitched it for a reason. I wanted to will it into existence. That's a feud and a match that I would love to see heading into WrestleMania season. And it would all but guarantee that we get Reigns and McIntyre at WrestleMania, because then they would have to get away from Reigns and Lesnar. Oh, yeah, Bash, I heard that story. That's an old story, though. That's not anything I think that recently happened. But that's pretty crazy. I mean, it was a story about a fan who I think he was maybe, I don't even know how he got in. I don't remember what building this was, but he got in and he was masquerading as MJF's pilot or driver or something. And he made a comment about how he was going to be piloting, I guess, like a private jet that Tony Khan had commissioned for him after a show. And MJF kind of probably suspected that, wait a minute, this might not be on the up and up. And he went to go thank Tony Khan, and Tony Khan was like, I didn't commission no private jet for you. And then they discovered the guy was a fraud, and they kicked him out of the building. Which is insane. If it went down that way, I mean, that's just insane. Someone said Heath Ledger is the best Joker. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those performances that it's just this legendary acting performance. And I like Jack Nicholson as the Joker. You know, he'd be my second favorite, but Ledger gets the vote for me. That whole movie, my favorite movie, Dark Knight. I could always go back and watch that movie, and it always has me on the edge of my seat. Oh, there's another cameo in that movie. Talking about, well, and we'll end on this. We're talking about wrestler cameos in movies. Zeus was the conscience in that one scene at the end of The Dark Knight when he doesn't blow the boat up. How can we forget Zeus? Shout out to Zeus. Rest in peace. Debo. Mark Hamill. Yes, I know. Mark Hamill was a good Joker. I'm thinking movie Jokers. Talking movies here. Movie Jokers. Yeah, and Morphine, I will continue to complain about the moonsault whenever she does it and it looks like shit. So if you're not being sarcastic and you really do enjoy it, then you'll enjoy it even more in the future, because I ain't going to stop. Yep, EJ, that was Zeus. Marcus the Entertainer, look at this, getting one last super chat in right under the wire here. Have you started The Wire? And if so, what are your thoughts so far? I have started The Wire. Too early to say. I'm only 5 episodes in. It's going very slowly. But I feel like it's going to get more exciting as time goes on. You know, even Breaking Bad, it didn't blow me away in the first several episodes. It took a while to build. And then a few seasons in, it was just blowing me away every week. I hope The Wire does the same. All right, guys, I'm out of here. Have yourselves a great weekend. I'm going to be back with you live on Wednesday for Dynamite. I ran down the card earlier. Sunday, episode 735 is going to be a packed podcast, lots covered. We're going to talk about Jimmy Rave, who passed away this past week. We're going to talk about the whole Hannibal referee situation, Kevin Owens re-signing with WWE, Ric Flair's stupid comments on his podcast. We got to talk about Raw. We got to talk about NXT. We got to talk about some AEW stuff that I have to get to. And a bunch of other stuff, too. Wrestle Kingdom, Shibata. Whole rundown of shit to talk about. So that'll be on Sunday, 7:35. Until then, be well. Stay safe. And again, have yourselves a fantastic weekend. Hit that like button if you would, please, on the way out. And for those of you Sound Off channel members, I thank you for your patronage. And if you want to become a channel member, the join button is under every single video. It will give you all of the information you need, and then you can decide if you would like to become a channel member. So until then, peace to all of you. I will see you back here on Wednesday live after Dynamite. Take care, guys.